incident must be obliterated from the memory of mankind. See, that's the fact. You understand? That is the fact. The incident of the Nachash and Chava was to be completely removed from the mental memory of man. See, that's what Chazal was saying. That's what Chazal was saying. The curse for the Isha and the Adam was different. That had to do with the nature of Adam and the nature of Chava. You see, but the Nachash, the idea of the Nachash and the curse to the Nachash, really is not so much whether the Nachash walks on his legs or whether the Nachash travels on his stomach. You see, but what the Torah is saying is that it had to be removed from the memory of mankind, the incident and the attraction, so the Nachash could not remain in his original form. What it means is that would be bringing to mind, that would bring to Adam's mind the whole attraction of the Nachash. So it was removed from man, was thrown into a part of his history that was forgotten history of mankind. That's basically what the pasuk is saying. Okay. Yeah. That's essentially the difference between, you see, and the Hu Yishufcha Rosh V'Ata Teshufenu Akev, Hu Yishufcha Rosh V'Ata Teshufenu Akev is also a reference to that idea that there is an attack against the instinctual, which is a direct frontal attack, you see. But then there's a counterattack, which is hidden. Atat Shefeno Akev. Akev means concealed, which is a description of the Yetzer Hara. Man attacks the Yetzer Hara, Rosh, but he doesn't really get down to the underlying source of the attack. Atat Shefeno Akev. And really, what the Torah is dealing with in this area has to do very much with, of course, it's factual, and in the account it's factual, but the ideas that are the realities, like the Rambam mentions, are the ideas that exist in the human mind. Okay, the ideas exist in the human mind. I'm not going to pursue it too much over here. I'm just trying to give you an approach, a way of understanding it. But that the fate of the Nachash is completely different. The fate of the Nachash is vis-a-vis Chava. You see, that's what it says, Ve'eva Oshis Ben Chavein Oisha. It's vis-a-vis Chava. It's not the Nachash, not for the Nachash. Nachash is gone. That's it. There was a Nachash, there was such a creature that was a combination of intelligence and instinct, and he ceases to exist. But it's not that he only ceases to exist, but that the encounter was erased in the memory of mankind, from the memory of mankind, and there's a reason for that. Okay. So now what I wanted to do was I wanted to just go through the with regard to the Isha. Now, what does the pasuk say with regard to the Isha? So the pasuk says, "Vayomar Hashem." Okay, that's so. What I'm trying to point out is that the curse to the Nachash is a different kind of a thing, and must be understood in its essence is in terms of how. And that's why Chazal say Hitul Bazuhama. You see, so the essence of the curse of the Nachash is insofar as how it affected Adam, not insofar as the Nachash himself is concerned. Okay, but the curse to the Isha and the Adam are intrinsic, essential. Are essential? Yes.
Curse is that man could not relate.
Okay, psychological events have a certain impact. It's a different. There's usually psychological events in between ordinary events. That's the difference.
So that's and psychological.
That absolutely.
And
that's
right. Relate to that psychology.
And that's right. And no one. And that is completely erased. It's completely erased. That's why Yisrael Chazal say that the zuhama of the Nachash was removed at Har Sinai. What does that mean? Does that mean that a person that stood at Har Sinai knew that? I mean, no, it doesn't mean. It means the Chazal had to tell us that. You see, but the experience was there, which means that at Sinai, a certain element of the instinctual, which was aroused by the Nachash, was put down, was subdued. The event, the awesomeness of the event of Sinai, you see. So yeah. But I mean, these are, of course, just what I'm trying to do here is not so much to bring out specific ideas, but just to give you a framework of what the Torah is teaching us in terms of, you might say, like Rashi Prakim, you know what I mean, like just the headings, you see. So it means to say, I mean, just to put it a little bit more in practical terms, what it means to say was that at that time, if the Nochash, if that did not happen to the Nochash, then Adam and Chava would not be able to erase the psychological impact of the event of the Nochash from their minds, and it would continue down through history. So the fact that the Nochash lost his height and his attraction made Chava forget, so to speak, the exact nature of the attractiveness. And if that wouldn't have happened, then she would have seen the Nochash, and she couldn't, and it would have aroused it. And then it would be repeated in the succeeding generations. But this was necessary in order for Adam and Chava to erase the psychological effect. And once it was erased, it was lost from mankind. That's what I mean by these events are primary events. And these are events in that have to do with the structure of Adam. It's not ordinary events that we would experience, because it was events at the time of the formation of the mind of Adam. And that's why they have a different kind of a character. And that's why you can't just undo these things. No matter how great a person is, he can't undo these. You say, why do I have to be cursed because of Adam? Because these events are unique. They're events that have to do with the structure of the mind of Adam, which was, from that point on, going to be carried on. So these events have a different kind of an impact. But that's why the Nochash had to lose its koma, its attractiveness, because otherwise Adam and Chava would still relate to it, and it wouldn't be forgotten. But since the attractiveness was gone, so when they saw the Nochash shifted, it simply had no value. And that's why the memory of the event was erased. But that's basically what the Torah is teaching insofar as the Nochash. What I want to show you is that the ideas of the Nochash are ideas that don't make any sense unless you understand what they revolve around and what their aim and objective is, the framework of the events. You see, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to give you the framework of the events and to show you how they make sense when you have the right framework. I'm not pursuing it into further detail. I'm just trying to give an overview of how to understand it, and how to, and this time, I mean, for further insight. But I'm just trying to lay down the basic framework. You understand what I'm saying? Okay.
And how does Sinai fit in? Because if the curse got rid of it, then what is Sinai?
No. See, it's these things. For further analysis, you have to understand that these things are not simple things, because you're dealing with powerful forces. So certain things that the event is forgotten, it doesn't mean forgotten like it's completely gone. See, it doesn't. That's not what it means. That in psychological material doesn't work that way. You don't just forget something and it's gone. You forget it, and by forgetting it, you lose its effect in a certain sphere. Doesn't mean the effect is completely gone. You see, that's why, in order to understand this area of the Torah, you have to understand. The basic framework of human psychology, you see, of how it works. So these are different kind of events, not ordinary events. Okay, an ordinary event that you forget, that's it. But over here it means, yes, it's true that man could not continue if the attraction of the Nochash were as it was before. He wouldn't be able to continue. It had to be forgotten. Had to be forgotten. Does it mean that because it's forgotten, it doesn't have any affect? It doesn't play any role in there? No, that's not true either. It does. And that's what Chazal says. Sinai undoes it. I'm not going into a detailed analysis and specific over here at this time. What I'm just trying to do is to try to show you a way of thinking about it and to understand how the words of the Torah make sense and the importance of what what the Torah is trying to convey. I'm trying to give you a basic framework. Without, I mean, we can go at a later time. We can go into certain details and into what a more precision and more elaboration and more understanding in what it means and ways that these things are manifested. But right now, I'm just talking in abstract, in general terms, to understand what is the Torah teaching us with the idea of the Nachash. That's the basic. That's the basic concept. It's very similar to what the Chazal that the Rambam mentions has a, certainly that meaning. I'm not trying to explain what the Rambam's saying, but the Chazal that he mentions that Adam, that God never showed Adam the Eitz Hadas, nor will he ever. What does that mean? You see? So you see that Chazal are telling you that to the Eitz Hadas as a tree, yes, that Adam saw. But the Eitz Hadas, in terms of what it means in human psychology, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu never showed him, nor will he ever show him. Okay? Doesn't say he can't discover things himself, but it says God will never show him that. You see? Doesn't mean he can't discover things. Doesn't mean that no human being can have knowledge of it. Doesn't say that. It says God will never show it to him. You see? Apparently, what the idea is that it was left to the realm of his Bechira to be able to continue and to ponder and to try to understand. And if he's Zocha to understand it, he can gain great insight. But for God to give him that insight would remove his whole realm of Bechira. It's very important to know that there's a big difference between something that a human being does by way of knowledge and pursuit of knowledge and truth and what is given to him before. There's a big difference in those things. See? What's given to him before is received in a different kind of a way. You see, what a person gains through insight and knowledge is received in a different way. It's a different kind of a knowledge. You see, that's what Chazal mean. That the knowledge of the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra was never given. God never showed Adam, and he never will. See, doesn't say that Adam, that man can never gain knowledge. No, he could, but then it's a different kind of a phenomenon. If he gains the knowledge and uncovers certain things about himself, that's different. Then if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it to him, it's a different kind of human existence. It's a different result. There's a difference in the result of whether a person attains knowledge through investigation and pursuit of chachma, or whether God simply initially gives him that knowledge. That's a different kind of an adam. Okay, it's different. Okay, the source makes a big difference. Okay, so at any rate, to get down to more, let's see. So that's again. That's what I just wanted to show you, the framework of understanding the Nachash and the Chazal, with the famous Chazal with the Maamar HaSinai. Okay. And to understand what the Torah is telling us about the Nachash and Al-Gachon Chaselech, what the idea over there is. Yes.
You okay. Mentioned that Nachash is an actual creature. How
yes.
How does that tie in with the rest of Rambam and the story?
Because that's what I spoke about. I gave a shiur that once before. That everybody runs into metaphor. You know, it's nice to escape into metaphor, but that's not the way to learn the Torah. And I think when I gave the shiur, I showed that the Nachash, that Rishonim take the Nachash literally. So I spoke about it at that time. Doesn't mean, you see, literally does not mean there aren't deep ideas behind it. Very deep ideas behind it. But people that can't understand it, they don't understand what took place and how those ideas emanate from the events, so they try to escape into metaphor. Yeah, but you can't do that with the Torah. That's what the Ramban says. That was Ramban's criticism of the Rambam and Vayera. Where Ramban's criticism was, because he didn't understand the root of the Rambam. So he says, yes, and then you'll just say, Kol HaTorah Kula, that's Megala Panam HaTorah, Shalok HaLacha. I mean, you just take the Torah and say that it's all a metaphor. So you'd be very careful of it, very careful. So that's why I gave a shir on the Nachash. And that's why I explained why the Nachash is literal, but what the ideas behind it are. They're remarkable ideas. It doesn't take away, but that doesn't mean the Medrash is not correct either. They're both. It's like the Ibn Ezra says, we understand the Medrash, you understand the Mikra and the Medrash and how it naturally flows and is combined, and that's a different, that's the real science of Torah. But you understand? I mean, that's I spoke about that last time. Yes.
Although false interpretation is not at that time, really, it all entirely different figure.
Yeah, entirely different.
Now, I mean,
yeah, well, he's
no,
different.
There's no intelligence and yeah. No logic.
That's correct. That's correct.
Pretty much like
it would be a creature.
The only reference, the only relationship that you have is the reference in the Torah that whatever creature it was now falls on its belly, which is what we have right now.
That's correct. Yeah, but that's what I'm telling you, what the significance of that is. That's what I'm explaining. That's exactly what I'm trying to explain right now. What the significance is of this Nachash that we have today in contradistinction to the Nachash as he was originally. But the significance of the original Nachash, I mentioned, is something which basically anthropologists have been searching for centuries, for generations, which is a creature that has a higher intelligence than the highest level of animal intelligence. Because there's a tremendous gap there, and why does animal intelligence stop at a certain level? I said that was the Nachash. The Nachash was really, they are right in the sense that according to nature, there should be a continuity and there should be a higher level of animal intelligence. And the Torah is saying there was, and that was in the form of the Nachash. So it has a deep meaning in terms of ideas and in terms of showing Maisa Bereishis, that Maisa Bereishis originally was more complete. It was more complete, but there had to be changes. You see, but originally it was more, and the anthropologists are searching for a missing link. They are right. They're onto something that it should continue like that. But the Torah explains with the Nachash exactly why it couldn't be that way. But excuse me.
An ape, not a snake.
An ape. Look, I mean, these things are. It comes to conjecture, and I mean, they get into the realm of imagination. I guess tell you what the Torah is explaining. Okay. So now what I want to say is like this, that the I think that was abandoned, that idea. There's a lot of problems with those things, with the porpoise and the none of these things in the world. But anyways, separate story. Now, so let's just take Elishama Harbar Betzvonech Veheronech Be'etzef Tel Divon. Okay. Yeah, so we mentioned that that there's a difference between the word etzev and between the word tsar. And etzev means depression. Like Rashi says later, vayis atzev al libo. Rashi says, yeah, he says, what is the pasuk he quotes? Nisabel, tzavelos. Rashi says, vayis atzev al libo, in the end of Bereishis. Nisabel al ovdon maise yodov. Kimonis Netzav Hamelach al Benel. Netzav Hamelach al Benel. He's depressed. Okay. Well, you have Velo Atzava Oviv Miyam of Lema Madua Kacha Asisa. That David Melach never rebuked the son. That was Adoniel Ben Chagas. So he never rebuked him. What does it mean? That's Velo Atzava. Because when a person is rebuked, he's depressed. Becomes depressed. So David Melach failed to rebuke him, and that's why he was arrogant and wanted to take over the Melucha. So Atzava means Etzev means. So even though Tirgum says Tsar, you have to understand the Tirgum. And Rashi says Tsar Gidelbana, but you have to understand where, you know, things aren't just always the same. The pain is, Rashi's telling you what the physical component is, but he's not denying that the word of Be'etzev means depression. Okay, but then he's showing you what the physical phenomenon is that causes this psychological thing. So it's not over here. Etzev doesn't mean simply pain. It means depression. So okay, the Heronech, Tsar or Ibur, and of course it means the menstrual cycle and the psychological depressions that a woman goes through because of her biological nature. Okay, but then it says El Ishech Chukosech. Okay. And then it says Vehu Yimshol Bach. Okay, yeah. So I just wanted to explain what it means, what those two phrases are. Velishech Chukasech. So one is depression. So it means that both suffer the same fate. That depression was to counter the effects of the component of his conscience or superego, is more precise, that that developed in him. Okay, so the depression counters that. We explained that the depression counters it because it removes on the spot the attachment, whereas the misa, the yoma misa, removes philosophically. It is a philosophical attack on man's megalomaniac pursuits. Okay, the part of man that gets him into his egoistic drives. Okay, his super egoistic drives. So we explained that. Yeah. So that both have, but the difference is by the isha it says valishech chukasech. Okay. Now what is the valishech chukasech? That she has a chuka for her husband, right? Yeah, okay, but but the husband has a chukka for her too. I mean, so what is the significance of this? And then the whole Yimshalbach. Okay. I believe that what Torah is describing here is in psychological terms. See, that's what Chazal say. That's what the Rav was mentioning about chazakas. He says you can't. When Chazal say there's certain chazakas that tavla mesef tandu, these are things that are from sheish mei bereishis, and you can't just talk them away. You can't change them. You can't change them. You can't, as the Rav said, you can't tamper with the chazakas of Chazal because they're based on ideas of the creation and the nature of man. So that that's why the Rav said that a woman alone is a much sadder. Phenomenon than a man alone, you say. But what does that mean? And that's Elishech Chukasech. Elishech Chukasech means, doesn't mean that she has a desire for the man, because that's true. The man has a desire for the woman. They both have equally desire. What it means is that the woman has a certain dissatisfaction with herself that she finds that she fulfills in having a husband and having a man. That's what it means. It means that she has a certain sense of dissatisfaction about herself. That's Velishech Shukasech. It's not a reference to the attraction between the sexes, because that's mutual. But it's a reference to an inner feeling, an inner psychological phenomenon, that she feels a certain lack of completeness, and she finds it in the identification in the relationship with her husband. You see, she finds that satisfaction. That's what Chazal say, that Yose Mima Sheho Ish Rotzalinase, Ha Isha Rotzalinase. That's what Chazal say. A woman has a greater need. And that's really expressed, that idea is expressed over here. Now, these ideas are underlying ideas of human nature, and you can't just make take a poll. I mean, you can't just make a study of it, because you have to know exactly what you're looking for and exactly how it's expressed, and there are many disguises for these things. But the underlying, what the Torah is telling you, the underlying root idea, and apparently it's significant for man to have this knowledge, because, I mean, that's why the Torah is telling you. But that's what it means, Valishech Shukasech. It means that there's a certain unhappiness that she has about herself that she fulfills through her husband that makes her feel complete, makes her feel a certain sense of completion. In a different way than a man has a satisfaction out of having a wife. That's something different. This is an internal sense of a lack, okay? Which is, that's Velishech Chukasech. Okay. Now, what's Vehu Yimshalbach? Okay? A lot of people want to know that. Yeah. So, Vehu Yimshalbach does not mean that the man will run the household. Okay? It does not mean that. Okay. Doesn't mean the man is boss. That's not what it means. You see, what? Because we see that that's a rarity. Yeah. So what does it mean? What does William Shulbach? William Shulbach means that what it means is that apparently what the Torah is telling us here is an interesting thing. And when you study Bereishis, it's very difficult because we're after the fact. In other words, today we look at our own nature. It's very hard to imagine what our nature was. I mean, you can't, because everything in your nature, when you study your nature, you look at your emotions, and your emotions are of the present. And anything that's otherwise sounds contradictory, and you aren't prone to think in those terms, you see. But it would appear from the Torah And that's what I said last time. I said it's hard for us to imagine, but it would appear from the Torah that the woman would really is the one that would take off completely with self-adoration, because she's like a creator, because she actually with her own body produces a human being. It's difficult for us to imagine what the force of such a thing would be on the human psyche, because it doesn't exist anymore today. But from the Torah, it would appear that that would be the most powerful force. And that's why, because that is really like a Maisa Bereshis. And Chazal say that three shoots from bottom. So it means that insofar as man is concerned, this is the most powerful thing. But that, you don't see, women don't experience that anymore. And that's because it's after the way the Bria was changed. See, the way the Bria was changed. Be'etzef tel divonim, harba arbet zvonech, veheronech, all these things, the depressive factor, the depressive element has kind of wiped out that counter, because, I mean, that was the plan that HaKadosh Baruch Hu implemented in the Bria, and the plan works. So it's hard for us to go backwards. But from the Torah itself, you see that apparently is something which is a psychological force that we today can have no concept of it. But logically, you can perceive it. It would be the most powerful force of being overwhelmed by the self, you see. So, but apparently also something else. It would appear that woman's nature originally was aggressive. You see? That's why it says, what the Pasuk say? That Vatiten gam le'isha ima vayochal. She was active, you see, in that event. Vatiten gam le'isha ima vayochal. The Pasuk say that Vatikach mipir vatochal, Vatiten gam le'isha ima vayochal. So apparently the woman before was active, aggressive, you see. But Vahu Yimshol Bach means that her instincts were converted into the passive, you see. That's Vahu Yimshol Bach. That's why Chazal say that a woman is a woman has more shame, she's not as forward, that's the nature of woman, but that is because of the conversion. But apparently originally she wasn't that way. Originally she partook of the active just as much as Adam. There's no difference, you see. And the Pasuk Vatitein shows you that she simply gave it to him. She was aggressive about it. So Vahu Yimshol Bach means that her instincts were now changed and became essentially, not complete, essentially, into the passive role. But that's why I said it doesn't mean that she rules the household necessarily. It doesn't mean that she's the boss, because through the passive you can exert a tremendous influence. The ultimate influence, not talking about who rules, it's talking about who Yimshol Bach. In terms of the instinct, is not an instinct of ruling. It's a passive instinct. So apparently, it would appear also that from the Torah you can deduce that originally the woman was aggressive, just like the man. Just like the man. You see. Okay.
Right.
Yes.
The conversion. Was this part of the...
Maybe make it clear. So apparently, in order... But this again, what does this show? This again shows you something that's very difficult for us to comprehend, because again, we're after all this, so it's hard for us to imagine. But apparently, if it wasn't converted into the passive, you see, that then again shows you the power of the Leda. The power of the Leda is so powerful that it was necessary to remedy that potential downfall had to be remedied with a few institutions. That it was not just the depression, but besides that, it was the Elishech Chukasech, okay, a certain sense of lack of feeling of completeness, which she derives from her husband, from the man, and also the passivity. The passivity changed the course, and that was necessary apparently also in order to counter the institution that was created to remedy the situation of following the tavoi leinayim, the lustful instinctual. So the institution of the conscience, or more correctly, as of the superego, had to be countered, and the passivity was another idea, was another element that grounded the woman. Because of the powerful force of childbearing. It's an interesting psukim. It really is an uncovering of the force of an instinct that you can't sense anymore, but you see the Torah is telling you all the changes that had to take place, which obviously shows you how powerful that force was originally, and of course is, but it's kind of deactivated. But in the study of man and understanding man, it's very significant, of course, even today, because that's the purpose of all of the whole account, is to give insight into the nature of man, because, like the Rambam says, there are realities today. And a careful and accurate study and understanding, I'm not doing that now, as I said, I'm just giving you the framework. But a careful analysis will have very important effect, not only on the woman, but on the man too. I mean, it's not just the individual. You're talking about Adam and Chava, so you're talking about man. So there are certain things that an understanding of the woman is helpful for the man just as much as for the woman, because it has to do with human nature. It has to do with human nature, not totally devoid. Man is not totally devoid from the instincts of a woman, and vice versa. You see, and there are ways where these things are expressed. I mean, Leda is, for instance, Leda. The idea of Leda. The idea of Leda has to do with creativity as well. It has to do with intellectual creativity. And therefore the effect. When the Torah gives you an understanding of Leda in an Isha, it has repercussion, has value, not just in the actual biological process of Leda, it has a value in the higher spheres of man as well. Because if you understand it by the way of knowledge, it has tremendous significance in the whole panorama of the human psyche. You see, I mean, it's not limited. It's a lack of insight to just look at these psukim and just say this one was cursed. I mean, that's not what the Torah is really trying to teach you. So the idea of the powerful force of Leda can be expressed in a man also. I mean, in architecture, man creates, he produces. That is a sphere of Leda. A sphere of Leda has to do, there's Leda, the biological Leda, but then there's Leda in the psychological sphere. Which, that's why what I'm trying to show you is that the ideas that the Torah teaches us are significant in the framework of the knowledge of the human mind. That's really why the Torah gives us the account. So you realize these things aren't limited. They're very, very pervasive. Very pervasive, yes.
With regard to the component of the depression, that would seem to be an additional item to counteract certain emotional drive.
Right.
But the other one, in terms of changing from aggressive to passive, that seems like literally changing the entire nature, as opposed to adding an additional component to counteract something.
It's a qualitative change. You mean that's a qualitative change?
Well, what I mean is...
That's a qualitative change.
No, in other words, with the first one, you could say there's still the underlying emotion. The only thing is the addition of the depressive aspect to counteract.
Countermeasure.
And theoretically, if somebody didn't have that component of depression, that drive would still be there.
Yeah.
Whereas the other one seems like originally they had this aggressive nature.
Abrogation.
Was changed to a passive nature, so there is no idea of, well, now if they didn't have this other thing, that drive would be there.
And once more, do one more time. Yeah. It is because the value of the insight that is working in man, every one of these things is working in man today, and not just in the Isha and the Ish, but it works in both of them. But it's giving you the origin of how the origin and the essence of where it resides. I mean, there's a lot of facets to it, but it's essentially, when it says the way the Torah is telling you, for instance, in the Isha, that's an essential phenomenon. It's an essential phenomenon. But there are outcrops of that that have to do with Adam as well. That have to do, you have to understand the idea over here. You have to, you understand what I'm saying? But if your question is to pursue, to put the picture together, I mean, that is definitely a noble endeavor, to put the picture together of, by the, let's take the Isha first, put the picture together by the Isha. So what do you have by the Isha? How many things do you have? You have one is, the first thing is the depression, and that we said is equal to man. The next thing is a sense of lack of completeness about the self, which he didn't have before. Apparently Chava before was very happy with herself. Never any complaints. So that was the second thing. And the third thing was that the change from the aggressive to the passive. I mean, again, it doesn't mean completely removed. It means that in a significant way, that the instinct travels through a passive course, essentially. It doesn't mean she can't be aggressive. I mean, it means that essentially its mode is passive. Its mode is passive. That's true. That's correct.
The underlying drive is really aggressive. That's what I was
No, the energy, let me put it this way. It's a conversion. It's a conversion. Okay, it's a conversion. In other words, the when you say aggressive, a lot of these terms are very bad, because aggressive has a certain kind of connotation which is not correct. A lot of the problem is when you're trying to deal with precision in understanding any area and the psychology as well, you make use of words that have side connotations that are not correct. Okay. I would say, instead of aggression, I would say the energy in man is always to move forward. That's the impulse to move forward. So there are two courses. You could move forward in an aggressive force, you might say. Again, aggression is not a good. I have another word. Or in a passive, in an active or passive way. Active is not exactly right either. But you understand what I'm saying? In other words, a person, it's like the Rambam says, if a person didn't have courage, he wouldn't get off the bed. What does he mean? He means that courage, you don't have to have courage to get off your bed, not what we mean by courage. He means there is in man the nature to move forward, to make use of his energies. And if he didn't have that, and courage has to do with that same force, to move forward. So the energy always wants to move forward. So, and if you didn't have any of that, you wouldn't get off your bed, because, you see, so the when we say aggressive, we mean the energy that is active and that makes a person move from one place to another in his psychological world. That energy can be worked out in two ways, either through an active aggressive form or through a passive form. In the woman, it's relegated to the passive. But she moves forward through the passive. But it's a different expression. It's a different expression. Okay? It's a qualitatively different expression. So apparently, but one thing you see from the Isha, and that's why I said why it's very hard to analyze it, is because it's not something that we have feelings about today anymore. But the logics of it is the way that we can perceive, can understand it. So apparently it means that this creativity that she biologically was endowed with was such a powerful force that it had to be countered on several fronts. And it shows you, and the Torah simply describes each front. So one front was the depression front. Now, what does the depression front do? The depression works in a way that it detaches one from the thing. That's what depression does. See, when a person... Depression makes a person is very ambitious and they want to accomplish something, then they get depressed. What does the depression say to them? Forget about it, I'm finished with this thing. See, it detaches. The element of depression is a detacher, so to speak. Detaches you from what you're into, you see? That's the nature of that thing. The sense of Elishech Chukosech is a different attack on being involved with the self as a great creator, you see? And what is that? That is a lack of a sense of completeness about oneself. That's a different way of countering that same force. Do you understand? That's a different way. That's a countering through the self. Okay? Because if you're not satisfied with yourself, you feel a lack, that counters the overwhelming involvement with the self, qua self. Do you understand? It's two different methods. It's completely different methods. You understand what I'm saying? Okay.
What's an internal and an external?
One is, in the case of depression, what depression does is simply detaches you from what you're involved with. You're involved in building worlds, and now you get depressed about it, I'm finished with this, goodbye. That's one kind of attack. The other kind is an attack on the becoming overwhelmed with the self as a creator. If the self feels that it's lacking, that counters it from the self point. Okay? And the third way is the passive. The passive is the character of the way you move ahead. If it's memshala and melucha, that is one train. That's one way to go. You see, which the character partakes of being overwhelmed with the self as a creator, because creator is active. A creator is active. You see, so the way it was countered by the Isha was on every possible front. In other words, in terms of the detachment of the energy, that's the etzev. In terms of the feeling of self, which is the objective to be overwhelmed with the self as a creator, the self sensed a sense of lacking, you see. And the third way was that the channel was a channel of passivity, and that's not the character of creator. You see, creator is active. So the character of the thing was changed. So you see the complete picture that emerges from the fate that Chava suffered. You see, the fate was one which, because of the overwhelming power of her position, it was countered on three fronts. Okay? You follow? But it is a complete picture.
What were the counterparts of man?
Excuse me?
You mentioned that also with man,
who
also
changed. I didn't get there yet. I just want to complete this. But you see? Yeah, okay. Okay. Again, what I want to emphasize is that the limud is not just a limud for the Isha, but the limud is for the Adam as well. I mean, I'm just reminded of a statement that Albert Einstein one time made. He said that we're always very involved, or we give a very high estimate to our work and to the work that we do. You know, each person, whatever he does, he gives a tremendous, like, this is the greatest thing. You know, whatever the person is involved with. And I don't remember, he goes through a few possibilities as to why it is that we feel that way. So, is it because the some of us may really are in more important things, like a scientist or different things? In the end, he concludes, he tries to feel, I don't remember, I read it a long time ago, but I remember he tries this, he tries that. In the end, he says, no, it remains a great mystery. Why we give so much value to what we do, you see. But it's true. It is a great mystery, and that's why the Torah addresses it. Because the creative element in a man is not in not just a woman, but in a man as well. You see, but in the man, it's not... What the Torah is saying is that if it were attached to the biological function, it would be impossible to overcome, because the instinctual resides in the biological. That's where its essence is. But like I said before, it doesn't mean that the idea is not applicable to a man as well. I said, for instance, Leda. And in Leda, there's creativity in man is you're getting into that same realm. And therefore, the ideas that the Torah speaks about and how to counter those things are significant, not just in terms of the history of the events as they unravel in the Torah in the original biological sphere, but they have great importance, great significance insofar as man is concerned in the intellectual sphere and in the psychological sphere and in the whole realm of the psyche, you see. So that's why it's important to notice, to understand the ideas and to see how it works. That the countering of the overwhelming satisfaction or desire for satisfaction with the self is countered in man on, basically, the way the Torah describes it by the Isha, is on three fronts. In terms of the attachment, breaking the attachment, in terms of a sense of a lack insofar as the self is concerned, the Isha has it on a biological level, but Adam has it too. Adam has that too. When man senses a lack of completeness in the self, that counters just as much. It counters in our world. It counters that self-satisfaction that the individual is looking for. And the third sphere as well, that man is passive also. Adam is passive as a passive element on a higher sphere, as a passive. As a matter of fact, I mean, the Kola Torah Kula is that a person recognizes God's will, which throws him into passivity. So the passive, the ideas that the Torah explains in the Isha have relevance not just to the Isha. That is the root of the source of these forces. But these psychological forces exist in all of Adam, in all of man. And they have very important, very very important effects in the life of the psyche, in the life of the psyche, for both individuals. For the woman, it was in the primary biological that it took place. But the ideas exist insofar as Adam in the higher, more sublimated spheres as well, in the sublimated spheres. And they're very important to have a knowledge of the ideas, and the three forces basically that counter the desire for man to be involved with himself and to... I'd like to show you a concept here. It's a possibility and serves two functions. That, number one, to bring out the idea of the foundation over here, that we said that the Nachash was an event, that Chava was attracted to the Nachash, and Adachon Chaselech was a removal of the attraction, and it was done so that there were no memory traces of the event, in the sense of an active memory. A memory that has a value in the person's life. You can remember something, but if it has no emotional value, so it doesn't really matter in terms of your emotional life. It's just a fact. So we said that with the Nachash was the event, her attraction to the Nachash had to be completely obliterated. So Gachon Chaselech removed the attraction of the Nachash. And it was completely forgotten. So, and Chazal say, we mentioned in Chazal that Hitl Bar Zuama. Hitl Bar Zuama and the those that stood at Sinai, so the Zuama was removed. And the other nations that didn't witness Maimar Sinai weren't heirs to the event of Sinai, so it remained. So it's kind of like a riddle, in other words. What was it that was a very powerful attraction, that attraction was so powerful that it had to be completely erased and removed from memory, and yet apparently something remained that Sinai corrected. That's really what That's really what we were saying yesterday, last week in the parsha. That there was some event that took place, that it was a very powerful event, emotionally very powerful, and it had to do with the attraction, the Isha's attraction to the Nachash, and that's why his coma is, when it says his coma was removed, it means that that was his prominence, his attractiveness was removed, Agachon Chaselech, and nevertheless, Hitul Bazum, or something remained from that event, even though it was erased, but something remained, and Sinai corrected it. That's what the when you put together the whole picture, I mean that's what the Torah is telling us. It's a strange riddle. So we just left it last week, like in a and just drawing the lines of what the Torah is telling us without really coming to any kind of a concrete idea. So. What I wanted to, even though, I mean, you know, to me, the main thing is the foundation. But the idea, I'm going to propose an idea as to what this possibly could mean. The event of the Nachash. And, which will explain all the aspects of what this so-called riddle is composed of. You see, the thing is the question is, what was this powerful attraction? Like the Medrash says, the Rambam quotes the Medrash that it was Samoil was riding on the Nachash. It wasn't the Nachash himself, it was Samoil. What I think it means is like this, that it's talking about the Isha was engaged in the desire for satisfaction. And that's clear from the way the Pasuk describes her view of the Eitz Hadas. And that it was something which was, it was Nechmod Lamara, Tov Eitz Lamachol, Savo Hilainayim. Nechmoreitz lahaskil. What I think it means is that, you see, in human psychology, a person is after psychological satisfaction, whatever the person does. But in order for the person to achieve psychological satisfaction, the person has to go through processes, and they have to do things. And in those things, they find the psychological satisfaction. But ultimately, the bottom line is a certain psychological feeling, a certain psychological satisfaction. That's the bottom line of whatever any human being does. So, what the Isha saw in the Nachash, was the attraction of attaining psychological satisfaction, you see, without engaging reality. In other words, to accomplish the goal of satisfaction but bypassing the events that a person has to do in order to attain them. Do you follow me? You see. So that kind of a phenomenon is something which would be a disaster for man. If man would try to make his goal just that, you see, then he would be completely devoid of reality. If that's what man's objective was. So in life, it doesn't work that way for us. In life, a person is very attached to events and to particulars in order to attain the goal of psychological satisfaction. But the events are the things that come to his mind when he's trying to obtain his goal. He loses sight of the satisfaction itself. But if a person would put himself to simply the goal of the satisfaction itself removed from any kind of reality, you see, then he would be destroyed. So then he would be totally in the world of fantasy. So that's what, you see, that's what the Nachash represented for the Isha. The attraction to the Nachash was an attraction to bypass all the necessary particulars in order to attain satisfaction and to go directly for the satisfaction. Yes?
Is not the child magical thinking something akin to that? The child goes through
it. Yeah, it's true. The child, yeah. The child is much better at that. But even the child is always attached to some kind of a physical reality, whether it's the mother's love or the whatever it might be, or the food, or whatever the instinctual drive is, but it's always attached to something which gives it that, engaging in that something gives it the satisfaction. But and in a grown human being as well. If a person wants to feel good, so a person has to go out and be successful or do things that they feel are successful, or even in the physical world. What a human being is after is really psychological satisfaction. When a person eats, he doesn't have the same desire as an animal. A dog eats because the instinctual gratification is what it is, what it goes after. But in man, when a person eats, he really wants a certain psychological sense. As a matter of fact, I mean, that's why the Rambam mentions in the Hakdama to the Shemona Prakim that you can't equate the desire of a human being, you can't equate the desire of a human being with the desire of an animal. Even though they all have desire, and insofar as man is concerned, he's an instinctual being, but he's completely different because there's a psychological element there. So his goal, even in the mundane and even in the instinctual itself, it always is for a certain psychological kind of satisfaction. The particular that he may employ in any instinctual gratification, there are different particulars he may employ. But the end goal is always a sense of psychological satisfaction, not a sense of instinctual gratification. So even if a person sits down to a meal, what he really wants is not what an animal is after, you see, which is simply the physical response, the physical neurological response. In man, it's a psychological thing that he's after. If he wants to have a meal, he wants to enjoy himself, so there is a certain, what his goal is, a certain kind of psychological phenomenon that to him makes him feel good. That's why a person doesn't eat like an animal. A person dines. It's a very elaborate kind of an involvement. It's completely different. Whole world of the whole culinary world. I mean, is a different kind of a thing, because man is a psychological being, and for him to eat festivities, most of the things that he has, most of what he's involved in, is really in order to attain a certain psychological sense when he's finished. He's after a certain psychological sense. So he needs an elaborate kind of setting. He needs to feel the environment is good, the table is set right, all the accoutrements and all the side things that are necessary in order for him to feel happy, to make him feel good, so that his eating wine and his food and the way it's set out and all the elaborations. The elaborations are what make him totally distinct from the animal world. That it's not simply a physical satisfaction that an animal has. As the Rambam says in the Hakdama in the first paragraph of the Shemona Prakim, that even though man has instincts and an animal has instincts, they're totally different, because man is of a different nature. So in man, what a person is looking for is a certain psychological satisfaction at the end of the road of all his strivings. What he's striving, the strivings are aimed at a certain psychological entity which makes him feel good. That's man's goal. It's totally distinct from the animal. So the thing is, in order to attain that psychological goal, in whatever he does, whether it's in a profession, whether in any, all of his endeavors, it's always the psychological element. The psychologist is really right, because the psychologist says that all the things that people are after, whether it's money, whether it's prestige, whether whatever it might be, it's all one thing. In the end, the bottom line is always a psychological sense of satisfaction. That's why for one person can be extremely happy living in a way where another person would look down at it and say this life is terrible, because it has to do with the person's psychological goals and his ends and the way they're structured psychologically, that what one person will think would be a great day, one person will go into business and spend 15 hours in business, and for him this is a day, another person will look at that as a horror. So the psychologist is right in that if you really want to look into the essence of a human's life, what you have to look for is an understanding of the psychological, because that the bottom line is that's what a person is after. It's not money, it's not success, it's not whatever it might be in any sphere. The bottom line is the psychological satisfaction. But if a person would be able to attain psychological satisfaction spontaneously and bypass all these processes, you see, that would be detrimental. Because then the individual would never engage in any kind of pursuit in reality, you see. If a person could take a pill that would give him total psychological satisfaction and bypass all the processes, he wouldn't do anything. He wouldn't have to have an elaborate meal. He wouldn't have to achieve any goals in life. He would simply get to the end of the line very quickly, and the end of the line is simply this kind of a satisfaction, you see. So what I'm proposing is that was the ultimate attraction of the Nachash. The ultimate attraction that Chava saw was, that's why the Torah gives that vivid description, was to get to the end of the line of the psychological satisfaction through this Eitz Hadas. Nechmod Tzavo Leinayim Nechmod Eitz L'Haskil. So it is something that will achieve the goal and the desire without going through all the processes that a person has to go through in this existence in order to attain psychological satisfaction, you see. In today's world, you find it. In today's world, that is basically the goal of drugs. That's the goal of drugs. The goal of drugs is simply to do that, to accomplish that, to get to the end of the line without going through any kind of intermediary steps, you see. So what the Nachash, that's why Chazal say it wasn't the Nachash, it was the rider. It means to say it was the end, that which is at the end of the line of the cycle of the process. The end of the line of the process is ultimately, no matter what pursuit a person takes on in their life, the end goal is simply that psychological satisfaction. So the Torah said that that was the attraction of the Nachash. And the Isha, when she engaged the Nachash, that's what came to her mind. And that had to be erased. Because if a person would have that state of mind, the attraction to the end goal would be so powerful that they'd never be able to take any intermediary steps. Any kind of intermediary steps. So, Al Gachon Chaselech means the attraction of the Nachash, that memory trace, so to speak, had to be removed forever, you see, so that man will never venture through that path anymore. It really is the most intelligent path, when you think about it logically. Why should I go through all the difficulties if what do I have at the end of the line? What do I have? A certain psychological state of satisfaction. So all these things are just a waste of time. But man, you see, man forgot about that. And man simply doesn't think about that. He looks for the satisfaction, but he must always look for activities and performances and involvements and pursuits and strivings. He always must take that course, you see. The reason why he must take that course is because of the fact that memory trace, so to speak, of Chava's attraction was completely obliterated from the from human memory, and therefore he doesn't choose that path anymore. Now he chooses the path through reality. How does he goes after psychological satisfactions, but the path is through a very, very circuitous course, and a course that in the long run we can't evaluate objectively, and it might not even be worth it. You see, but he has no choice, because his instincts are fixed to attaining the psychological satisfaction through the course, you see. So he can't even evaluate it. That's the question, yeah.
You do see that druggies, heroin addicts, and capitalists do, once they are engaged in that activity, aside from the addictive feature of those things, would they continue to go after that in that fashion?
They do. As a matter of fact, many psychologists know that there's two types of addiction. There's addiction which is a physical addiction, but then there's addiction which is psychological addiction, which means that a person that has gained tremendous satisfaction through a drug, which gives them the greatest high, and they bypass all of reality, so they're addicted. Once they do that, they can't refrain anymore from doing it. Not because it's necessarily physically addictive, but because of the psychological, you see. But the only thing that stops them is that's the abnormal. See, that is the abnormal. But that's why it's not most of humanity, because that is it. But you see that phenomenon does exist. That phenomenon does exist. But that was the phenomenon that took place with Chava. The reason why it doesn't, why most, like normal people don't travel that course, is because that concept was obliterated from human history, from human memory. Yes?
You said the attraction was to the Nachash? But there was an attraction to the Nachash?
That was the attraction of the Nachash.
Of the Nachash.
It is referring to the AIDS. I understand, but that was what the Nachash proposed.
And that was based on the...
Because the Nachash was the one that presented it to the Isha, yes. The rider is the one that gives direction. If you have a horse and the rider is the one that directs the course. See, the rider is the essence of where we're going. So the rider means the one that is in charge, so to speak, of the goal. The goal is the psychological satisfaction. That's the goal of every human being. Every person will take a different course. One person will say, well, the way to do it is, the way to achieve my goal is through having this this particular position. Or the way to achieve the goal is, there are many, many different courses, through being a playboy. Or whatever course the person may choose. I mean, the variety is infinite. There's an infinite variety. But the bottom line of all of any method, it depends, of course, how the person is raised and the person's nature and all the different elements. But the end goal in every human being, whatever it might be, whatever the person's, whether it's a good career or whether it's whatever it might be in life, or even in the instinctual world, and even in the strongest of the instincts, it's always the psychological that's the strongest element in everything. And in every area, yes.
Based on the share you gave a few weeks ago.
It's not logical. You're right. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that the way that the instinctual world is set up, and that's what the Torah is telling you here, it's set up in a way where now what the Torah is telling you is like this, that it really isn't logical. And the only reason that we live this way is because of the fact that the effects of the real logical was completely obliterated. If those effects were not obliterated, then man would simply never be in reality. And he wouldn't even engage in reality, because it's not worth it. If his goal was fixed on the pure satisfaction, he'd be a goner. Either he'd have to find something that'll give him a pill that'll put him in that state, or else he simply would be totally devastated. So it had to be completely removed. This way he fools himself. It looks like he's going to have it in the future, and he does this and that, and he keeps on the trail, and he keeps in reality. But now let's get back to the Chazal. I don't want to get to this Chazal. So the Chazal say that was the Zuama. But it says though, so something did remain, apparently, even though the essence of it was obliterated. So now man doesn't think anymore about the psychological end. Most people don't think psychological. I mean, that's really, most people think concretely. They know that people don't think, people don't sit down and say to themselves, look, I want to have a psychological satisfaction. So that's why I'll get a career, so I'll have the psychological. That's not the way people think. See, the instinct is tied to the particular more than to the goal. And that's why most people are frustrated, because in the end they say, what did I get out of this? You see? Because they forgot to think about what they're going to get. The instinct is trained, the instinct is habituated in a way that it's attached to the endeavor, and it focuses and is attracted to the endeavor. Of course, in the back, the truth of the matter is what the person's after is really the satisfaction, but they never look at it that way. They don't look at it in a logical way. They're not logical about it. That's when Nechmar eats lahaskil. You see, lahaskil means it was sechel. This was completely the logical way to go about it. So asava hilenayim, the Nechmar eats lahaskil. So the sechel was, that is logically, nobody can argue that. If a person can give an individual a pill and say, look, all your strivings, everything you'll need, forget about that. What do you want? You want to feel it? There it is. So there's no logical answer to that. You see. So why don't people do it? The answer is that at one point in human history, in the early part of the development of man in Chava, that was true. But that was completely erased. Once it was erased, so the instinct was channeled to attach itself to reality and to forget about the goal. The goal is sort of like an undercurrent, but it's not really, the mind doesn't really attach itself to that goal. So that was obliterated. So man now does not go after the psychological satisfaction, which would be the logical thing to do. But but something remained, apparently. Something did remain, and it says that Sinai, those who are at Sinai, so they lost the Zoama. But the other nations that were not at Sinai, they didn't lose it. What is that a reference to? It means that there was an impact at Sinai, aside from the Chochmah that Klal Yisrael received at Sinai, which is Kol HaTorah Kulo, but aside from that, there was an emotional impact that remained with us. And what is that emotional impact? The emotional impact is the awe of reality. The awe of reality. See, in Sinai, those who witnessed Sinai were filled with a certain awe. An awe of reality. Because through the event of Sinai, that's why it says, the pasuk says, what does pasuk Laman, it says that Loshna pasuk, Loshna pasuk says Levilti sechato, Laman, the pasuk says about Sinai that you Laman. It says, that's where it's in Dvarim, right? It's in Yisrael? Okay, I'm sorry. It's in Yisrael. Yisrael. I mean, right, yeah, okay, good. So where is it at? Chaf Yitzayin. Okay. Chaf Yitzayin. Yeah. Vayotze Chaf. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, Vayom Moshe Alon. Yeah, Vayom Moshe. Vayom Moshe. Daber ato imonav in Shmo. Vayidaber imonav lekin penomus. Vayom Moshe Alom al tiro. Ki lavavur nasos eschem bo lekin. Ubavur tiye yirosol penechem levilti sechetal. Okay. So it means that it's true. You're right. That really you can't be omed b'fnei Hashchina. But there was a reason why you had to have this event. Lavavur tiye yirosol penechem levilti sechetal. So there was an impact at Sinai, and the impact was the awe of reality. And it means that the Jew is different than the other nations. That in other nations, the propensity, the proclivity for a person to engage in in activities that remove him from reality is much greater. In the Jew, it's much less, you see. In other nations, in other nations, the nature of looking for an outlet through escape from reality is much greater, you see. They're much more prone to that kind of an activity than those who are Omer HaNasim and Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael don't avail themselves of activities that remove one from reality as much as the other nations. That's what it means. I think that's true.
That.
Yeah, what was it?
The positive.
It means that it should always be that way. Yeah, right, right. I mean, it's an eternal thing. That's correct. That's correct. And that's why you'll see that it is true that the world recognizes it also. That Jews drink, they say, but they're not drunk. You see, they don't have the same. It's not the same as a guy. It's true. It's a true thing. The world recognizes that. It's a fact. Why is it? That's Sinai. That in Sinai there was a certain awe of reality, and escapism. To engage in escapism is much more against the nature of a Jew than it is a non-Jew. You see, than it is a non-Jew. That's because of the event of Sinai. The event of Sinai had a very powerful emotional impact. And that goes back to what Chazal was mentioning about the Nachash. And the Nachash was the real prototype of complete escape of reality. Going for the psychological end immediately and focusing and having all the energy focused on that end in itself. See, that had to be completely removed. Because if that remained, then man would be gone. So that had to be removed. But it was Hitl Bazuama. Still, there was something left of the desire to attain satisfaction through the escape of reality. Escaping reality and bypassing all the necessary things and simply going for the enjoyment. And in Shikras, that's what you have. Shikras is a little of that. That's what it is. It's an attempt to remove oneself or from reality and just go for psychological pleasure. So that remains, and the in a smaller form, you see, not in the original form, had to be erased. Because if the intensity of the original attraction that Chava experienced at the moment that the Nachash encountered her, if that would remain, then there would be a goner. He'd just be focusing on the intensity of the focus on the psychological end would destroy him, remove him totally from reality. So that had to be obliterated. But something did remain. What did remain? And man still has the ability. He could be in the midst of serious problems and he can engage in shikras. And shikras is where he says to himself, let me just have the satisfaction. Forget about all these plans and all these and all these involvements and all these these difficulties. So that remained and Klal Yisrael that stood at Sinai, they removed it, and the Zumo was removed. But the Umos HaOlam that didn't stand at Sinai, it's still there, because they still have the ability to escape reality. You see, that remains over there. You know, there was years ago. There was a there was a whole to do about Time Magazine many, many, many years ago about the fact that Goyim discovered that Jews had a song. And it was an anti-Semitic thing, but somebody brought to their attention that the Jews mocked Goyim, and they took the song, the famous song "Shikar is a Goy," and they translated it. See, "Shikar is a Goy," "Shikar is a Tinkum is a Violet is a Goy." So it was a song that Jews sang in the ghetto. So, but the song that was the song basically. So somebody decided that it would be very good, very, very good for the anti-Semites to know exactly the meaning of the song. So they translated it word for word. There's a whole big to do in the Time magazine many years ago, a whole big issue. But the song was Shikir Zagai. But the song is based on some reality. The song is based on reality. It's based on the fact that it is true that it is more difficult for a Jew to engage in escapism than it is for a guy. And that's because of the Maimar HaSinai and the awe of reality that we experienced and the event that we're heirs to. And insofar as a person is attached to Maimar HaSinai, you know, we're heirs to Sinai, but there's different level of heirs. So insofar as a person's level of an heir to Sinai is, that could be measured by how much or how little he engages in escapism. That is the measuring rod, you see. Because Sinai is the awe of reality. That's the event has that impact on man, you see.
The intellectual content of the Chacham itself wouldn't be enough to produce that result, that impact?
No. That's what I'm saying. Besides the communication, besides the communication of the knowledge of Sinai, the Pasuk says, the Vavur, they told Moshe Rabbeinu, they said, I mean, it's plain shot in the Pasuk, Daber Atoi Mono V'Nishma. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, don't worry, you're right, but there's a purpose for the fact that you had to hear the first two dibros, Mipi Agvura, because that was Levavorti Rasal Pnechon Vildisachatol. So that's an emotional impact. That's an emotional impact. That's an important emotional impact. You can't just bypass. You can't bypass human emotions. I mean, that's the whole study of Gan Eden, of the event is all the study of the structure of the human mind, the complex structure with the emotions and the instincts and everything. Not a simple person, not a malach. Yeah.
You say the impact of Sinai. You mean as far as a cultural legacy as well? In other words, a family that's not necessarily know the Torah is true, if they're a Jewish family, they may also at least have an inheritance of the idea that it's not idiosyncratic reality. Reality
that's
is
right.
not idiosyncratic.
That's right.
There's an objective reality.
That's correct. That's right. You're right.
True.
That's right. That's why even a person who is not necessarily a Shomer Torah mitzvahs, he can still inherit this effect. And that's why I'm saying, and the world notices it, that Jews on the whole are different. They pursue, even the worst anti-Semites among them, that they pursue Chachma and that they don't engage in the avoidance of reality and in Shikras and things like that to the same degree as the Yomos Olam. That is it's a fact. People know that. And why do you think they printed that thing with Shikras Agai? Because it bothers them very much, because they know there's a reality to it. There is a reality to it. That's the Chazal. That's the Maimon Chazal. That's the Maimon Chazal, yes.
It's a fine thing, because just this past week there was a commercial that was came out in Ireland that was just banned. They were very upset about it, because what it was basically was this volcano that erupted and lava rocks all over the place. And you see a guy running barefoot over the hot lava rocks trying to, you know, get to a certain point. And where did he get to? He was the pub owner. He was trying to open the pub for a line of people waiting outside to get a drink. So the guy was very upset about that. They said they banned it. They were banned it.
Yeah.
Yes. The name is
Samael. Samael is the Yetzer Hara. That's what Samael always means. Samael always means that. Samael means the instinctual, and the Samael really is the. See, Samael is the instinctual, but Samael is the instinctual on a higher level. It's the instinctual as it goes through all the permutations of the human mind and emerges in disguise, but in symbolism, in what happens at the end of the road in man. Because of his complex nature, when the instinct finally emerges, it's not the same as the instinct in an animal. It's a very complex system. It's a psychological phenomenon. Samuel, that's what Samuel means. That's why in Yahadus, I mentioned many times that you don't have any. We don't have any symbolic representation. Symbolic representation is derech avodah zarah. It's a derech avodah zarah. There's only one case that we have it, and that's by the Sohar Mishtalach. because the Sora Mishtaleach, that's the Ramban, I want to remember this part. Sora Mishtaleach, that's why it's not brought in the Mikdash, and that's why everything about it is a prototype of the instinctual life and a representation of man's nature. And what happens to man's nature when it becomes involved in the designs of the Yetzer Hara, and that's why it's thrown over the cliff and all those things. The only time, because that is the representation of Samael. Yes.
Would you say that other religions that came, you know, that formed out of Judaism, you know, also to some extent would share in that as well?
No, absolutely not.
Do you recognize
Sina? No. There's a different. They don't recognize Sinai. They don't recognize Sinai because you can't have Sinai without an Echad Hashem Elokecha. That's not possible.
Rabbi?
Well,
okay.
No. I mean, they accept. Accept
what?
The Old Testament.
That. What? They accept. But they're accepting. It's not Torah. It's not. It's nonsense.
What does
the
Rabbi have to say? Tell me truth. Tell me Christ. I'll accept Christ.
Yeah. That's right. You're right. That's right. That's very good. That's the famous statement from the Reb Bolchum once from Dostoevsky. That he said that even if Yeshu is not true, he will still rather believe in that than the truth. You see, that's what he said. I forgot the exact quote.
Really
what?
Really
he said, in other words, yes, that it is that the idea to him is so attractive that it's worth more than the truth. You see,
right.
That is the prototype of escapism. You see, that's exactly what escapism is. See, the strong attachment to unreality and to fantasy, to the extent that it has a greater value than truth and reality. See, that's Chazal said, that's what we received at Sinai, that we can't do that.
Okay.
That we can't do. Do a lot of avarice, do a lot of wrong things, but that we can't do.
Okay.
Yes?
Yeah, also, so how does it work, I guess, by Gary, in terms of, you know, how do they, I guess, discover this reality of escapism
I want you. See, people misunderstand Chazal. You have to understand Chazal, and not in a mystical way, in an intelligent way. It means that any human being, any, that's the whole Adam Arishon is all of humanity, and Adam Arishon has a Tzelem Elokim. A Tzelem Elokim. It's very wrong that you see today. You see people talking, and in my opinion, that's really. Something which is an untruth and definitely promotes a sinner against the Klal Yisrael, and that is where you see these books that come out where they talk about the Jewish soul. The main thing is to save a Jewish soul. That is not correct, because just because a person is born a Jew, if he's evil, if he's a Russia, he's mitzvah abdol asono, and he's not Klal Yisrael. He's completely removed from Yisrael. We don't maintain a person who's born a Jew, no matter what kind of a Russia he is, that he's superior to a non-Jew. That's nonsensical. It's a melech leitz dakol mishpat. That's not mishpat. So that's just bigotry. So what we say is that we're not just concerned about a Jewish soul. We're concerned about the Tzelem Elokim. Kadosh Baruch Hu is concerned about every Adam, every single individual. And our function as Klal Yisrael is that every Avraham Avinu was, what was his whole purpose? That all the Bruim Aboyim Acher, called Boy Olam, should have access to the correct idea of God. That's the most important idea. So we're concerned about Kol Olam Kulo. We are not maintaining superiority of a Jewish soul. Because any Tzelem Elokim is a Tzelem Elokim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Oev HaSabrios. And that's a nonsensical bigotry. That's just arrogance. But the phenomenon of Maimad Har Sinai is open to every Tzelem Elokim. When we say that the ones that stood at Sinai lost the Zuama, it doesn't mean magically only those people that were there, and it doesn't mean magically that only the specific offspring of those people. It means that was the impact of the event. And if any Tzelem Elokim that recognizes the truth and becomes a part of Yisroel, he is an heir to Sinai, just as much as we are. There's no specific. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fair and just, and every human being is the same. Every human being is Tzelem Elokim. There's no difference. But we were fortunate in that we were able to have that experience of Sinai, and to inherit the experience. Doesn't mean we're the only ones. If a guy, the Gemara says, Rish Lakish says, a ger is on a higher level than us, because he did it well. He does it willingly. So that's even a higher madriga, a higher level. It's not a, it's a that would be a bigoted idea to say just those souls that were there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just. Why should he pick out certain souls and say these souls are entitled to the benefit and nobody else is? I mean, that's not justice. So any human being can become an heir to Sinai. But all Chazal are explaining is that that was the purpose. One of the purposes of the event was that the event itself, the event itself countered the Zuama of the Nachash. And it gave man the ability to have something. The Maimed Har Sinai, when a person reflects on Maimed Har Sinai, so there's an awe of reality that he's inspired with. And that is something which is the greatest tool against what was the remnant of the Zuama of the Nachash. That's the concept. But it's Kol Bo'i Olam, any human being. No, it's not, that's not true. We don't maintain that we're concerned about we're only concerned about Jewish souls. That's not true. We're concerned about everybody. We're concerned about Kol Bo'i Olam. So and every human being has its own malakim. But we have a certain advantage. But that advantage, the purpose of that advantage, is to implement it in a way that Kol Bo'i Olam should have access to it. Not to keep it to ourselves. It's our ten people mamlachas kind of a guy kaddish. A simple open psukim. People that distort these things do so because of their own bigoted feelings and their own arrogance. It's against Kol HaTorah Kula.
Right?
Yeah.
So, maybe I missed something there. So, if a Jew is brought up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, Teaneck Shnishba...
See, that's the mistake when the Goyim assumed, and the mistake is often our mistake. It's because Jews themselves don't recognize the advantage they have in the proper way, and the person is not necessarily is usually always prone towards arrogance. So he becomes he thinks that he's intrinsically somebody special, but that causes a sin. That definitely causes a sin, and it's against Kol HaTorah Kula.
So a Teaneck Shnishba brought up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, he has a better chance of this awe. Of reflection on awe than anyone else?
No, I think what Michael said. You want to explain?
I'm saying it's a cultural legacy. In other words, to the degree that partakes of the Jewish heritage.
Not forbidden teacher. They're not forbidden teaching Torah. The Gentile, because the Gemara says that a Gentile that is Oseg, that involves himself all his life in Torah, is bigger than a Kohen Gadol. So that's what Chazal say. That's what the Gemara says.
I thought there was an essay to teach a Gentile Tarsh Baal Peh.
No, on the contrary. A Gentile has to learn Tarsh Baal Peh. He should be spending his whole life in Tarsh Baal Peh.
But in any of those matters, that relate to him?
Only. That's half a Shas. He can spend his whole life in it. We couldn't finish it. His whole life should be against
Tarsh Baal Peh. Matters that don't relate to the Gentile.
That's correct. The thing, it depends. The only restriction that there is, the Miri says, that a guy in areas of philosophy and ideas and Ashkafa, that 100% a guy is mechuyev to, really. I mean, he's not going to be nenash, but if he doesn't do it, but he's mechuyev to do it. And the derech of thinking of Tarsh Baal Peh and the whole methodology and all the areas that pertain to him, which is a large part of Shas, which every guy could spend his entire life and never finish, that is mechuyev to, that's the highest level of a guy that lives that kind of a life. What he's not allowed to do is, and any time he wants, any mitzvah he wants to do willingly, which is everything basically except Shabbos, so he also has a right to be involved in limud and understanding. But what he can't do is engage in limud in an area just for speculation, which he has no intention of doing, which he doesn't take as a vehicle of perfection, but just because he wants to be intellectual, that he can't do. And then basically he can't. That would exclude him from Shabbos because only insofar as he has to know. But it would exclude him from Shabbos, and he could never. He certain areas which he couldn't do, he will never be able to engage in deep learning in. But a tremendous amount of according to the Rabban, Nezikin and Bava Kama, Bava Nasir, Bava Basra, Shavuos. Areas of Sanhedrin. I mean, it's all areas of perfection, all the mitzvahs of perfection. I mean, it's Rova Torah, basically. So that depends. I'm not going to know the mitzvahs. I'm just telling you. They, on the contrary, that's what Chazal said.